It's time for Bleed Tech Blue Radio. This is your source for Louisiana Tech sports news. For the next 90 minutes, Bleed Tech Blue Radio goes deep inside La Tech football, basketball, and recruiting. Now here's your host, Jonathan Ford.
Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Back after a week of a little hiatus, a podcast-only edition of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Hope you checked it out. This is our last show until after the new year. Hope everybody has a Merry Christmas out there, Tech Nation. We certainly will here in the studio between John, myself, and Jared. Jared, a couple of sponsors, then I want you to jump right into what we're going to call Jared's Soapbox of the Week.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can email your question. Excuse me, not email. Well, you can email radio@bleedtechblue.com. Or you can use Twitter with the hashtag BTBRadio, and we'll get to your questions on the air. Today, Conference USA announced it's all conference teams, and also it's all freshman team. All freshman team, Louisiana Tech had three on it. Deldrick Canty, a defensive lineman, got on. Cedric Cooper, a DB safety, got on, who got significant playing time this season. He was named. And Carlos Henderson was named in two different positions. He was named at wide receiver and was also named at kick returner. I thought Conference USA did a pretty good job of representing Louisiana Tech on that all-freshman team. First team all-conference Louisiana Tech members of that all-conference team, Mitchell Bell at offensive line and Xavier Woods at defensive back. That's it. Those are the only two Louisiana Tech representatives on the first team.
And in case anybody's can't remember, Tech was in the conference championship game.
Not only were they in the conference championship game, but also they were the number one defense in the league.
And in case anybody's wondering, that was called stoking the fire.
For the second team, Louisiana Tech had Kenneth Dixon at running back, had Trent Taylor at wide receiver, and had Houston Bates at D-line. No Adarius Barnes, no Levander Liggins, no Kentrell Bryce. None of those warrant any recognition on the first or second team. Let me ask you a question, Jonathan Ford. Who played better at defensive back this year than Xavier Woods and Adarius Barnes? Five interceptions. Louisiana Tech was number one in the country at the end of the season for takeaways, interceptions, tied with Louisville. That secondary,
the part that blows my mind probably the most about the corner position is Bryce Callahan. And I remember back to the Rice-Louisiana Tech game and how many yards they gave up through the air.
Oh, absolutely, because Bryce Callahan did not have a very good season this year. And I was on Bryce Callahan at the beginning of the year. I had him as Conference USA Defensive Player of the Year. I thought he was going to have a great season, and he didn't. Louisiana Tech's second-string DB, Bryson Abraham, had just as many pass breakups and more interceptions than Bryce Callahan. Yet Bryce Callahan is representing Rice on the second team all-conference. Bryce Callahan, not Adarius Barnes, who had five interceptions.
Or even Levander Liggins, who may not have had the interceptions, but does lock down a side of the field.
And then Trent Taylor is on the second team at wide receiver.
Who could cover him in the conference?
Well, not only that, but he had more yards and more touchdowns on fewer receptions than two. Excuse me, one, Lucky Whitehead. Antonio Vaughn had more yards and more. Antonio Vaughn from Old Dominion was the only wide receiver in the conference to eclipse the 1,000-yard receiving mark. Also had 12 intercept touchdowns. He certainly deserved it. Tommy Shuler had more catches for fewer yards and fewer touchdowns than did Trent Taylor, but Tommy Shuler plays for Marshall, so he's in.
Preach.
It's unbelievable. Louisiana Tech, oh, they got the short end of the stick when it comes to Conference USA all-conference awards, no doubt about it. Kenneth Dixon had 21 touchdowns. He's on second team. I don't necessarily blame them so much because Jordan Howard did have over 1,500 yards. Devin Johnson had over 1,600 rushing yards, but not one player scored more points total than Kenneth Dixon did this season, and that includes him beating all of the kickers. The kickers, because the kickers are typically the highest point scorers in the league at the end of the season, because they get 1 point for every touchdown, and they get three on the field goals. So they always, when the team scores a point, no matter where the touchdown goes, the kicker is getting a point. Kenneth Dixon scored 30 more points than Marshall's kicker, who was second. 33 more points by a running back who averaged 12 points per game by himself. Three more points than did the Marshall kicker, Justin Haig.
It's bad.
It's very bad. It's almost as though they did not watch the games, because Houston Bates is on the second team. Houston Bates had a good year. Houston Bates did not lead his team in tackles or tackles for loss or tackles. None of those categories. How does Houston Bates get it over a guy like maybe Vontarius Dora or
Terrell Pinson?
Terrell Pinson. Tony Johnson or Kentrell Bryce. How is that? It's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And then honorable mention, of course, no Cody Sokol in there anywhere, who had 29 touchdown passes on the season. He doesn't get in any mentions anywhere.
Who Cody Sokol arguably is probably means the most to his team than anybody else in the conference.
Oh, well, no doubt about it. And then
arguably Jordan Howard.
Well, that team is no longer.
That team is no longer.
So,
and obviously, I mean, Tech did almost beat Marshall. I'm not going to take that away from Tech. But the couple of plays that Devin Johnson was in, he was a difference maker.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're a completely different team without Devin Johnson.
Honestly, I don't think.
So he might be the most important player to a team.
Very well possible. Now, when it comes to the honorable mentions, of course, Kentrell Bryce, Adarius Barnes, Lavender Liggins, they all got honorable mentions. Tony Johnson, Terrell Pinson both get honorable mentions. So it's not Vontarius Dora, Vernon Butler both got honorable mentions. But honorable mention doesn't mean squat. It doesn't mean squat.
There is some breaking news in the Twitterverse. Thayer Evans of SI tweeting moments ago, Louisiana Tech's Matt Moore, offensive line coach, will join Troy coach Neil Brown's staff as co-offensive coordinator and O-line coach, per a source. We had heard rumors of that here in the last hour, but it's public at this point.
So Matt Moore moves on to Troy. Now, at Louisiana Tech, correct me if I'm wrong, but at Louisiana Tech, he was offensive line and tight ends, inside receivers.
Just tight ends, I believe.
Tight ends, okay.
Not inside receivers. That's Joe Sloan. In the way that it broke down at practice is if a tight end was practicing blocking drills, Matt Moore was handling it. If it was a catching drill and all that kind of thing, Joe Sloan. So they kind of shared the roles of the tight ends. But nonetheless, Matt Moore was a good coach. We saw lots of growth between last season and this season of the offensive line. Not a whole lot more can be said about that. I wish Matt and his family all the luck in the world at Troy. I think he will, from what I've heard, he will coach the bowl game with Louisiana Tech and then head on to Troy. Good opportunity for Matt. He has been at Troy before, so this is a chance for him to go back home. It may be even be his alma mater. I don't know that for a fact, but I think it may be. So good luck, Coach Moore. I mean, with Tech success, this isn't going to be the only one that Tech loses probably in this offseason. We're going to hear lots of speculation about Manny Diaz, but that's one that I think Tech may have a decent shot at holding on to. I don't think the right cards have fallen, and you never know. The coaching carousel is something that is basically never ending. So good luck to Coach Moore in his future endeavors, especially at Troy. Good opportunity for him. He just looks at me, shakes his head. But, of course, moving on to a little bit of basketball. At 6:30, we will have Jeremy Werner from ESPN Radio in Champaign, Illinois. Of course, Louisiana Tech will play University of Illinois in the Heart of Dallas, Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl, day after Christmas in the historic Cotton Bowl. Good matchup for the Bulldogs. I don't think the bowl outcome changed at all by Tech losing.
No, not at all. Matt Moore's from Valdosta State, by the way.
He has been at Troy then.
Correct. Anyway, no, I don't think it changed the bowl scenario for Louisiana Tech at all. The way it works is the conference champion supposedly picks which bowl game they want to attend. Marshall obviously won the bowl game. The Conference USA Championship, and therefore got that opportunity. However, Marshall did not really pick which bowl game they wanted to go to. Rather, they told Conference USA Commissioner Britton Banowski, put us against the best team. And apparently they felt like Northern Illinois was the best opportunity. So Marshall will go to the Boca Raton Bowl against Northern Illinois, therefore leaving Louisiana Tech, who had been wanting to go to the Heart of Dallas Bowl since before the season even started, with the Heart of Dallas Bowl. If Louisiana Tech wins that game, I think they tell Commissioner Banowski, hey, we want to go to the Heart of Dallas Bowl. They lose that game, they're still going to the Heart of Dallas Bowl. I don't think it hurts you whatsoever. In fact, it's absolutely, totally a positive. You get into that DFW Metroplex, play a bowl game against a quality Big Ten opponent in Illinois, and you're right there in where you've been recruiting.
You know, it's a head-scratcher still for me from Marshall. Is Northern Illinois a better opponent? Is it a bigger, a higher profile opponent than Illinois? Albeit, Illinois didn't have the greatest year. I mean, their coach essentially saved his job by getting bowl eligible. He probably gets fired if he doesn't get bowl eligible.
Right. Well, Northern Illinois did finish 11-2, win that conference. It's the only bowl game matchup outside of the Access Bowls, the New Year's Day Bowls, where two conference winners will face off against each other. But when you look at the Northern Illinois schedule, who did they beat? They lost to Central Michigan. They beat Miami of Ohio. The bottom 10 calls them Miami of Ohio. Anyway, 51-41, so they barely got past Miami of Ohio. But so far, I'm seeing
the common opponent is Western Kentucky, and Western Kentucky nearly beat. Oh no, I'm talking about Illinois. Sorry, you're talking about Northern Illinois.
Right, I'm talking about Northern Illinois.
Different Illinois.
Right, yeah. But regardless, the schools that Northern Illinois beat on their way to an 11-2 final schedule were nobodies. Three of them were in the final bottom 10 on ESPN.com. So,
And with Marshall being a former MAC member, I mean, what right. good does this do you?
Well, I agree with that too. The only thing that you could say that this helps you or is a positive for you if you're Marshall is that I believe it was like 40 some players on your roster are from Florida. That's
those
it.
Those kids don't care about going to play a bowl game in Florida.
Well, but who would travel to – if Marshall was to play in the Heart of Dallas Bowl against Illinois, who would go? Who would be there in green?
The same people that are going to be in Boca.
See, I disagree because the families of the players are already in Florida. That's what I'm saying. That's the only way I can –
How many did you say, seven?
What?
How many players from on the Marshall roster are from Florida?
40.
40. So okay, let's say that they have four people per player. You've got 160 more people in the stands.
Okay. All right.
But that'll look like a UAB football game inside of Legion Field.
Stop picking on UAB. They don't have football anymore.
They're down. They're as far down as they can be.
Yes.
It's easy to kick.
You're right. It's not fair. It's not fair. Stop picking on UAB. I feel bad for Jordan. Actually, no, I don't. I don't feel bad for Jordan Howard because Jordan Howard
is
going to play at a Power 5 school next year.
It has come out that Wisconsin's looking at him. I bet he goes to Vandy.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he's going to go to Vandy. I think Vanderbilt is the best fit for Jordan. And if he can prove that he can play in the SEC, then he's going to be playing on Sunday.
With the biggest of the big boys.
Exactly.
And then let's go through the bowl lineup for Conference USA. The Gildan New Mexico Bowl, UTEP, shocker, versus Utah State. I don't think UTEP wins that game. I think Utah State probably wins that one. Boca Raton Bowl, of course, Marshall versus Northern Illinois. The Bahamas Bowl is Western Kentucky versus Central Michigan. Hawaii Bowl, Rice versus Fresno State. And then, of course, the Zaxby's Heart of Dallas Bowl, Louisiana Tech, and Illinois. Going back through that list, the Boca Raton Bowl, Marshall wins that. Bahamas Bowl.
If Devin Johnson's not healthy, I'm not so sure that Marshall wins that game.
That's a fair point. With all this time, though, he should be.
Right, yeah, you would think that he would be.
Although it's not as much time as one might think. That game is the 23rd.
Yeah, it's 14 days.
So he'll be better than he is today. But the Bahamas Bowl, Western Kentucky, Central Michigan, Western Kentucky should win that. Hawaii Bowl, Rice, Fresno State. Fresno State was not really that good this year. Rice has a chance to win that game. That could be a pretty good football game, honestly. And I think Tech beats Illinois.
Yeah, well, not only that, but Louisiana Tech did come out as favorites over Illinois.
It's up to six, I think.
Yeah, it's up to six now. It started out as like 3.5, so there's a lot of money
being played on Tech.
Right, so
Illinois wasn't that good.
No, 6-6. I mean, they squeaked into bowl eligibility. They were 6-6 on the season. It's not as if Illinois is world beaters or anything. That's the reason why they're from the Big Ten playing in the Heart of Dallas Bowl, because they're 6-6.
Touche, LaFleur. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll talk a little Tech basketball. We'd be remiss not to talk about Tech basketball.
Big game against ULL coming up.
Ooh la la. Ooh la la. That's how they would say it. Those crazy you-know-whats.
Cajuns?
Yeah.
We'll go with that. I was born in Lafayette, so I'm allowed to say it the other way. Because I am one. Anyway, let's take this break. Other side of the break, a little Tech basketball. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Short segment here, a little Tech basketball. Then we'll get to Jeremy Werner from ESPN Radio in Champaign, Illinois, talking a little Fighting Illini football.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Hawaii Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Hawaii Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet your questions to us with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll get to them on the air.
Well, Tech basketball continues to win. Call it less than impressive. I mean, they didn't look great against Jackson State.
Much better in the second half.
Oh, they were a different team in the second half.
Louisiana Tech has been the different team in the second half in almost every game this season. Come out and played much better in the second half as opposed to the first half. Slow starts.
And they only scored 65 points against Jackson State. Now, after going off for 99, it's going to happen. You're not going to score 99 every night. But of course, haven't lost since the Temple game. And if they shot the free throws as well as they've shot free throws every other game, they beat Temple. And they're undefeated right now and probably sitting at number 23, number 22 in the country.
You got ULL this week. Tomorrow night, actually.
Yep.
They left about
an hour ago, I believe, to go.
Oh, I was told they were going to leave around 3:30, but
maybe it was.
Regardless, I mean, it doesn't matter.
I lose track of time.
It doesn't matter anyway. But ULL sitting at 3-4 on the season, of course, beat Loyola, beat Louisiana College, lost to Tulsa, lost to Auburn.
I wouldn't just say that they lost to Auburn.
Well, they got creamed by Auburn,
105-80, folks.
The head scratcher is Milwaukee.
Wisconsin, Milwaukee's always had decent basketball.
But they only scored 52 points.
If memory serves me correctly, that's where Bruce Pearl came from. Johnny, am I right there?
Didn't he start at Southern Illinois and then he went to Champaign?
Well, the Champaign's University of Illinois. I think
I'm talking started at Southern Illinois.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And then went from there to Champaign and now is in Manhattan, Kansas.
No, Bruce Pearl? Bruce Pearl's Auburn.
I'm thinking of.
Yeah, wrong guy.
Bruce Weber. I'm thinking of Bruce Weber.
Bruce Pearl, the guy that got it sanctioned by the NCAA.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin is where Pearl was.
Okay. Anyway, beat ORU, beat Jackson State, lost to McNeese State, and now Tech.
Well, I'll say this. McNeese State has the Cajuns' number in basically every sport, minus baseball. They have a winning record against them in a football. I don't know what their record is in basketball, but they just got beat by 10 by McNeese. Playing at home for the Cajuns inside the Cajun Dome, I mean, it's a nice building. Owned by the city of Lafayette. Seats about 15,000. Big old place. Tomorrow night will be an interesting matchup. I think we'll know a little bit more about this Bulldog basketball team after tomorrow night. And now they don't have Elfrid Payton anymore.
Elfrid Payton is in the NBA.
Playing for the Magic.
Right, yeah.
Starting, if memory serves me correctly.
Not anymore.
He's not. What happened? He benched him?
Oh, yeah. After game three? Game four?
You're an NBA fan. I'm not.
Yeah. Well, no, I am an NBA fan. And it's not that Elfrid Payton's played bad. It's just that maybe he wasn't ready yet.
I think the Pelicans would love to have him. The Pelicans have one player.
The Pelicans are playing in the hardest division in basketball, too, which doesn't help.
They are, but they have one player. And his name just happens to be Unibrow. Anyway, we move along. The guy that I've been most impressed with thus far that's kind of surprised me is I think Jacoby Boykins has been more ready than I thought he'd be. He's got a pretty three-point stroke. Xavier Stapleton's the most ready of the newcomers. I take Eric McCree out of the equation. He is a newcomer, but at the same time, he's been here a year.
Right, and had Division I experience prior, so...
It's hard to still call him a newcomer, but he is. I like the roster. There's not much not to like.
This may be an unpopular opinion. I'm still not a big fan of Eric McCree.
Defensively, I could see where you're coming from.
Defensively,
he lacks effort.
Absolutely. That's the best way to put it. Almost plays defense somewhat lazily. And then on offense...
Were you there at the Jackson State game?
I was not at the Jackson State game. I've been to.
He played like a different player against Jackson State. He played with a lot more energy, a lot more like Chris Anderson. He threw his body around. He was on the floor a lot, going after loose balls, which is something we haven't seen.
Right. No.
And they need to see. If Tech wants to be the team that they want to be, Eric McCree's got to sacrifice his body. John, we got a phone call. Let's take it real fast, and then we'll get to Jeremy Werner since we are up against an interview. We kind of have a hard break here.
Only three rebounds from McCree in that Jackson State.
Who do we have?
Jason.
Oh, Jason Jones. Jason, what's going on, man? We're up against a break. We just make it snappy.
Oh, I was just gonna say, it's really cool how you lose the seniors like JJ and CJ and Anderson on the wings, kind of. And Coach White just comes in with so much more length. I mean, Stapleton and Boykins are so long. And then, Kedar Davis had a really good game against Jackson State. And he can just put waves of these 6'6", 6'7", guys in there with long arms and just throw them at you over and over. So I'm really excited about this team. I'm hoping eventually we'll see some Merrill Holden or even the other big guy freshman
Janiyah
that redshirted
White
last year. Leo.
Oh.
I'm hoping one of them will be able to figure out a way to steal a few minutes because, I'm worried in conference play they're going to need another rebounder off the bench. But other than that, I'm just in love with all the guards and just how well they've already started playing.
Well, who are you most surprised by?
I would have said Boykins, too. I mean, everybody was talking about Stapleton, and you expected the junior college guys that had a little bit of experience to be more ready. But to see these two 18-year-olds, Stapleton and Boykins, just come in and look like veterans almost. I mean, Boykins is just very smooth out there and very confident. And I would have said the same answer you did.
All right, Jason, appreciate the phone call, my man.
Cool, thanks.
Jason Jones, previous co-host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, Jeremy Werner from ESPN Radio in Champaign, Illinois, to talk a little Fighting Illini football, of course, Louisiana Tech's bowl opponent in the Zaxby Heart of Dallas Bowl. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7 in Ruston. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared, a couple of sponsors, then we'll get to Jeremy Werner with ESPN Radio in Champaign, Illinois.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse.
Jeremy, you probably never thought you'd talk to me again after a couple of years ago, but here we are.
I don't think Illini fans wanted anything to do with Louisiana Tech after the last time they played.
That is probably a fact. That was I know that Houston Bates speaks of that game. He didn't play in it, but he remembers it pretty vividly, and I don't think he has real fond memories of that game as an Illini.
Yeah, that game kind of was the beginning of the end almost for Tim Beckman in this program. You know, he came here after Ron Zook, you know, lost his last six games, but that was still a bowl team the year before, and they still had some talent. And Louisiana Tech came in right after Illinois got its butt kicked down at Arizona State, and Illinois just couldn't handle Louisiana Tech. Obviously, Quentin Patton had a big game, but Sonny Dykes' crew just went over a defense that had a bunch of, you know, guys who are still playing in the NFL right now on it. So, yeah, that was what we thought. It kind of set the tone for the Tim Beckman era. Until these last 5 weeks, Illinois really put it together. It's been a surprise. We thought Beckman was a dead man walking, but behind Riley O'Toole at quarterback and an improved defense, Illinois finds a way to win three games and get bowl eligible. It's a down Big Ten, but it's kind of surprised us all, because ever since that Louisiana Tech game, there wasn't much to root for here at Illinois under Tim Beckman, but the last 5 weeks have changed everything.
What has been the biggest difference in the last 5 weeks?
I think, one, who they played. You know, the Big Ten, obviously not very good, but the start of their Big Ten schedule was just absolutely brutal. They had Nebraska, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and those teams are obviously three of the best four teams in the Big Ten, and Illinois is definitely one of the bottom teams. So just that start didn't help. But then Wes Lunt, you know, once he got back from injury, he's a really talented guy. I think he's got a chance to play at the NFL. A big arm guy, but just didn't have the pieces around him. And once he got back from injury, you know, the offensive line wasn't playing very well, and they just couldn't get anything going. But Riley O'Toole, who's a senior, who we kind of gave up on, gave them a little bit of a boost. He just didn't create any turnovers, and he kind of really ignited the running game of this offense, which really struggled to get going. Just gave the defense another thing they had to account for. So that ignited the offense, but the defense really stepped up against Penn State, only allowed 14 points against a bad defense, or a bad offense in Penn State. And then against Northwestern, the defense played pretty well. Another bad offense, but Illinois kept them bad. And Illinois' defense had just been run over the entire season. So I give it to the seniors for really turning this thing around, and for the staff for not quitting. Because I thought this team was a bowl team before the year, and then the start of it after that Purdue loss, we all thought it was going to go downhill in a hurry. But they continued to fight while everyone was giving up. So I just credit the seniors for keeping them in it and finding a way to get to a bowl.
Well, Louisiana Tech still has Kenneth Dixon on the roster. And he was a true freshman back that year. I'm pulling up those statistics right now. He went 11 carries for 41 yards. They weren't a big running team then. He has accounted for, Jared, how many total touchdowns this season?
21 touchdowns this season, has scored 156 points. He averages 12 points per game.
How's that rush defense for the Fighting Illini?
Oh, it's atrocious. It's the worst in the Big Ten, one of the best, one of the worst in all of NCAA in Division One. So, yeah, that's what I would do. If I were any team, I'd run on Illinois. Their defensive line isn't very strong. Their linebackers, you can run by them. And they've had a lot of troubles really tackling this year. You know, they've taken bad angles. It's improved as the season goes along. So it's not the same team. I don't expect Louisiana Tech to have the offensive lines that Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Ohio State had. But you can run on this team. You can put up a lot of points on this team. So, you know, everything has given them troubles on defense. They're the worst in the Big Ten in scoring defense. They're the worst in the Big Ten in rushing off or rushing defense. They're the worst in the Big Ten in pass efficiency defense. So, you know, Louisiana Tech's got a good offense. They should be able to find a way to score some points, especially, you know, with the staff that they have that's experienced and can find a way.
When you talk about defensive line, it's impossible for Louisiana Tech fans not to think of Houston Bates. Would Houston Bates have started for Illinois this season?
He definitely would have helped. Houston wasn't a great Big Ten player. Probably was more suited, you know, because he's kind of a tweener. He's probably a best as a 4-3 defensive end. He had to play a kind of different role here where he was a stand-up linebacker. Was probably a better fit for that 4-3 defensive end, but he was just small in the Big Ten. So I just didn't think he fit in this defense. And obviously he wanted to get closer to home as well. But, yeah, he would have helped because they just don't have a lot of experience up there. And he still had a lot of tackles for loss, led them in that category last year. So he definitely would have helped. Would he have changed the season? I don't think so. Illinois just needs more talent on that side of the ball. They're just really young with the guys who actually have some talent, and they're still learning how to play, but they did improve towards the end of the year.
You talk about Riley O'Toole. Look at his completion percentage isn't wonderful. And then rushing the football, 77 rushes for 261 yards, 4.7 yards a carry. Is he more of a scrambler? Will they do the zone read with him? What's the story? You say that his feet has kind of opened up the running game.
Yeah, with Riley, he's a decent athlete, and you look at him, he doesn't look like it. He's a decent athlete. He's not going to burn by you. He's not going to have, you know, 50-yard touchdown runs like a JT Barrett or something like that. But he got to account for his legs, and that's just added some of this Illinois offense because their offensive line just hasn't given a lot of push. He's an accurate passer. He's been more accurate in the past couple of weeks. You know, I think he went 18 for 27 against Northwestern. He doesn't have a big arm, though, so he's going to try and dink and dunk you, but he does have that ability to scramble. Not a burner. He's just been so efficient here recently. He's not going to beat you by himself. He's going to have to get some help from some of his playmakers. Wide receiver Mikey Dudek's a true freshman, and he's just an unbelievable playmaker. A guy that's 5'9", if that, but unbelievably skilled. He's a great athlete. He has about a 40-inch vertical, so he looks small, but he can go up and get it. And he's got speed to burn. And Josh Ferguson, the running back, I think, you know, can break the big ones as well. So those are two guys they got to account for. If Riley's accurate, and if he can move the ball, move the sticks a little bit with his feet, Illinois could probably put up some points.
Did it surprise you to see Louisiana Tech favored out of the gate from Vegas?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you just look at the numbers. You know, whether you look at, you know, really efficiency numbers, you look at their defense and what they've done. You know, they've played some decent teams, but Illinois is just not a very good team. And anyone that's seen them knows that this team has a lot of flaws. And, you know, they've gotten a lot of recruits here recently who aren't total Big Ten guys. They don't have a bunch of Big Ten offers. You know, they're recruiting guys that Cincinnati has gotten before, some MAC schools have gotten before. So Illinois does have some players that who are probably going to be the most talented players on the field, but not all of them. So the talent level might not be that big of an edge, but Louisiana Tech just played better football all year.
Jared, you got any questions?
The scoring defense of Illinois is dead last in the Big Ten, giving up 33.9 a game, really being outscored by close to a touchdown per game this season. Is that defense as bad as advertised, or are those numbers a bit skewed because of the Ohio States and the Wisconsins and Nebraskas that they played?
If you're giving up 34 points a game, you kind of are what you are at some point. they're not very good. And defensive coordinator Tim Banks has been really under the last 2 years. You know, their first year, they have guys like Akeem Spence, Michael Buchanan, who are playing in the NFL, and they weren't able to get the most talent out of them. Year two, they didn't have a lot of talent, but they just got run over, absolutely run over. And then this year, we expected them to take a step forward, and they really didn't. Until the final three games, they finally started forcing some turnovers. which has been an issue here, and they finally started stopping the run a little bit. It was against worse offenses, but they did take strides. This isn't a good defense, but they have gotten better. It'll be interesting to see them against a team like Louisiana Tech, because against a team that you guys know, Western Kentucky, who Louisiana Tech killed, Illinois gave up a lot of yards in that game. I'm interested to see how much more they've improved against that caliber of opponent, you know, that an offense that's capable, but maybe not as talented as a Nebraska, Wisconsin, Ohio State.
If you were to predict an outcome today, I know we're 2 weeks out, we're not going to have another show until before the game, so this is as good a time as any to start predictions.
Yeah, I've been terrible at these this season for Illinois. I predicted them to beat Purdue, and they lost that one. I predicted them to beat Iowa. They end up losing that one. Then I had them losing against Penn State and Northwestern, and they win both of those. I'm not going to count this team out because it does have a fight. You know, the last couple of years, maybe they didn't have that. But just seeing what Louisiana Tech has done, I would probably have them favored. But I think it's going to be a competitive game. I think it's going to be a good game. It's just Illinois. You know, has played some bad opponents. Louisiana Tech might be better than Penn State. They might be better than Northwestern. So I would have to side. The eye test, Illinois just hasn't passed it. I'm not trying to sell them short here because they did fight at the end. I think it'll be a good game. But predictions have been pretty bad, but I'd probably side Louisiana Tech.
All right, man, we appreciate you coming and joining us here and giving us a perspective on the Fighting Illini, and I'll talk to you tomorrow, I believe.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, Jeremy.
See you.
Jeremy Werner from ESPN Radio in Champaign, Illinois. Man, he is not high on the Fighting Illini.
Well, if you look at their numbers, you can see why. Worst in red zone offense, one of the worst in red zone defense. Opponents are converting third downs at nearly a 50% clip against that defense. Not only that, the defense gives up over twice as many yards rushing as that offense can gain. Time of possession, they're worst in the Big Ten. Out of 125 NCAA, FBS, Division One, whatever schools on the NCAA stats website, they are 120th in rushing defense.
Ouch.
They're giving up over 250 yards rushing a game. Not a lot to be excited about if you're an Illinois fan.
And the Big Ten is down this year.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. The Big Ten is down this year.
If Ohio State can play with their third-string quarterback and still run through it. I mean, they play with their first, second, and third string quarterback this year, granted. But they're playing in the playoff with their third string quarterback. What's that tell you about that conference? I mean, it's a little bit to say about the recruiting by Urban Meyer, but I think it's more to do with the level of play in the Big Ten. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, a little more Louisiana Tech, Illinois talk here on Bleed Tech Blue. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I am Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com. We're going to throw a little audible at you right now. Talk a little UAB, Conference USA, possible expansion or not, maybe, who knows. Jared, a couple of sponsors, and we'll get into that that discussion.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Wide Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can tweet your questions to us with the hashtag BTB Radio, and we'll answer your questions on the air.
Well, Jared, some more inside the numbers, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. Probably the best one we've seen, piece on Vice.com, Vice Sports, one of the best investigative journalism websites probably on the internet. Analyzed the numbers and all that kind of thing, and you really got into this article. Tell us what you pulled from it.
Well, Vice Sports really looked into this report that Car Sports did for UAB's athletic department, did for President Watts over there, and Carr, they ignored a few very important details when they looked at the financial figures. Like, for instance, when UAB is paying for 85 players to have a scholarship, Carr Sports looked at that as though it was costing UAB something, when in essence it's writing itself a check. Not only that, UAB is attempting to grow its student body. So adding those 85 scholarship football players is not costing a regular student a position at the school because they're trying to grow. Now, how in the world are you going to continue to grow your university when you're taking maybe the single largest marketing tool possible off of the air and out of the stadium by getting rid of football? Not only that, Carr Sports looked at the 2018 numbers, 18-19, and it estimated that UAB's athletic department would need to spend $4.4 million for those 85 football scholarships, which is priced at $52,000 per year. That being said, they do not charge $52,000 a year to attend UAB, even out of state. The actual cost of attendance is somewhere between $22,000 and $35,000 per year, depending on if you are an in-state or out of state.
Was it factoring in the cost of attendance stipend?
Sort of.
Even though we don't know what that number is yet.
Exactly. They don't know what that number is. So what really matters is the actual cost to UAB, which is a school of 19,000 students, of having 85 scholarship football players, and that cost is pretty close to nothing. Goose egg, nada, zilch. Zero. It's close to zero. So that being said, they also figured in 2018-19 that Conference USA was going to continue to pay the university its share of TV contracts and all that stuff, which basically equates to about $800,000. Between now and then, Carr Sports came out with a report saying that UAB would make around $3.2 million in Conference USA TV contract payout. Not true. Not true one bit.
Because
Conference USA does not pay out if you do not have a football program.
Well, they don't allow partial members.
Exactly. So no football, no money. So take that out of your report, Carr, because it's not true.
Because UAB will have to look at joining a conference like the Ohio Valley or
exactly
the SoCon where Mercer is. So and their payouts are less than half, I would venture to say.
Oh, yeah. Roughly, they said earlier that if they were to join the Ohio Valley, they would pay out roughly $300,000, which is less than half of what Conference USA was paying out.
I disagree with their point that it cost them nothing for the scholarships, because you still have to proportionalize the scholarship numbers for paying the professors that they're in their classes. So ultimately, they're not helping pay those teacher salaries. And I understand that, and the services and all that stuff.
Okay, well, at the same time, though, you have to take into account walk-ons. There's going to be a 25 to 30 walk-ons who are going to pay their own way. If those walk-ons pay just in-state tuition, which is $15,000, into the school's coffers, that's all going into the school, that's roughly $450,000 a year. So even with the stipends, you've now totally made that cost back up with your walk-ons to almost break even. Almost break even. According to this, you'd be losing something like $10,000. $10,000. $10,000. Also, UAB, one of the other, and this has been talked about with Louisiana Tech as well, facilities. When you're in Conference USA or really any conference, you're always trying to improve your facilities to keep up with everyone around you. And it is true that UAB's facilities are not the best.
They're atrocious.
They said they estimated the cost of getting them up to Conference USA standards or peer school standards, and they said it was going to cost them $22 million. To upgrade them. Carr Sports said that it would cost them $22 million, and they took that all out of one year, and they took it all out of the football budget. All out of the football budget when they did their report. UAB makes $1 billion annually as an institution. And this Vice Sports was talking about how you could, if you chose to pay that at $2 million a year over the course of the next 10 years, you are essentially spending one half of a percent of your annual budget as a university to increase your or upgrade your facilities.
At the end of the day, both car sports and vice sports are using the numbers to benefit their points.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the truth is somewhere in the middle. And the truth, honestly, is probably laying at the feet of Bear Bryant Jr.
Oh, exactly.
I take this report from Vice Sports with a grain of salt, as I take the Car Sports report with a grain of salt.
Well, Car Sports also mentioned that of the $1.65 million in sports-related charitable donations in this past year, they said that they estimated that only 400,000 of that was given to just football, when in actuality, 400,000 of it was given to football specifically, and then almost 1.2 million, thus making up the other 1.6 that was given, was not given to a specific sport, was not pledged to a specific sport in general, and almost all of that was paid to football.
Well, there were reports similar to that under the previous administration at Louisiana Tech. So that kind of thing happens pretty much everywhere. So let's say that somebody gives a $2 million gift to the athletic department. It is not uncommon for the administration, whether it be athletics or above, to take that $2 million just completely off the top of the general fund. So it's no longer coming out of your budget. They're just replacing that money. So you're not adding that $2 million to the budget. So that's a similar concept. So I said this on our podcast version of the show last week, and I stand by it. This is the only way in Division I sports to save money. You can't – UAB behind closed doors knows they won't be able to compete in basketball and baseball at the same level they're doing now. They know that. They don't care. They're trying to save money, and that's what it's all about. And they've done it. They've done the only way you can save money in Division I sports. If you drop down to D2, it doesn't save you that much money. Then going FCS, because you're not FCS. You're going D1. You're cutting football completely. So between D1 football and D2 sports, there's not a drastic difference in price. So they've done it. They've done the only thing they can do and still compete in collegiate athletics. It's a travesty for the student athletes that are on campus now. That's who you feel the worst for. Now let's get to the long-term ramifications as far as Conference USA goes. With the bylaws of Conference USA stating that you cannot be a partial member of the conference, do you think they should add more schools? Do you think that the additions they've made in recent years, including Louisiana Tech, was to protect it from attrition? How do you feel about that?
Well, no, I do think that the additions were made to save it from attrition. When you look at the conference layout, the argument could be made either way. I mean, you could make the argument that yes, they need to add another member to replace UAB,
which was going to be a Western Division member this coming year.
Right, the UAB would be in the West this year, but you don't have to. You do not have to replace UAB, and I think that's part of the
the number of teams will be the same next year as they were this year, because Charlotte comes on board as a full member.
Exactly. So Charlotte will be competing in football next year, which would put – now, Charlotte was going to be in the East, and UAB was going to slide over to the West.
So now just the East stays unbalanced from the – they have more teams now than the West.
Yeah, 7-6.
I think that's where they stay. If they were to add teams, you've heard – you would think it would have to be on the Western side.
Yeah, I mean, you would need it to be, unless you want to, again, to have someone swap sides.
Unless you call Middle Tennessee in the West, but they've got a natural rival in Western Kentucky.
Right, already on the east. Old Dominion already has.
Or do you add Georgia State? That's kind of in the middle, and they bring in a big TV market.
Honestly, I
potential
feel
potential eyeballs. You don't bring that market. You bring the potential of getting that market.
Honestly, I feel like the best bet, if you're going to replace UAB, and Jason Jones has said this before, and Jason puts a lot more time into researching this stuff than either one of us.
He's a schemer.
But you feel like you have to get an Alabama team, which leaves you with Southern Alabama or South Alabama. USA, South Alabama. I don't really like that. I'm not a big proponent of adding South Alabama to Conference USA. Honestly,
if Georgia Southern was in a bigger market, they are the obvious choice in my opinion.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Georgia Southern, don't get them confused. Not to be confused with Georgia State. Georgia Southern would absolutely be the best pick in my opinion, because you're not going to want to add a school that's already in a market for a school that you've already got. Southern Miss, that's not really a problem. UAB, replacing UAB with another Alabama school would be
Southern Miss would not like South Alabama.
Exactly. Southern Miss wouldn't like South Alabama. I'm not sure that Southern Miss would like Georgia Southern either, but regardless, so many people have been talking about maybe the Big 12 adding two schools or the AAC and from the AAC or something like that. You're not going to, just like Houston doesn't want Rice, Southern Miss doesn't want Southern Alabama, or South Alabama.
Tech doesn't want ULL.
Tech doesn't want ULL. The list goes on. Honestly, you can leave it right where it is.
The Big 12's not going to add any more Texas schools. They've got no reason to.
Right.
The AAC is not going to add any more Texas schools. There's no reason to.
Right.
So I don't see the AAC attrition coming from the Western side. Maybe Cincinnati. If something happens, I don't think that happens though. But BYU to me for the Big 12 would be number one. But we've left talking about Conference USA at this point. I don't think they add anyone, and I don't think they need to.
Well, I mean, most of the programs that have moved into Conference USA, Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech, even Marshall from the MAC years ago, all of these were looking at it as a step up. If you add a team like South Alabama, it just dilutes it. Honestly, I feel like the best thing to do right now would be to wait. If you're going to add someone,
status quo.
Just keep it where it is, because there's not a team in the – basically, you're going to have to pull someone from the Sun Belt. There's not a good enough team in the Sun Belt right now.
Or you move somebody else up from FCS. James Madison's one that's been talked about. Old Dominion wants a travel partner up there, somebody to keep them off so much of an island. They want James Madison in pretty badly. And then Western Kentucky was – Marshall wanted them in badly. So that's why they're in. So at some point, that kind of stuff's got to stop, and you have to focus on improving your brand and improving your league. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, we'll go back into football talk and talk about Louisiana Tech. We'll talk a little bit more about the Marshall game and then projecting into the bowl game, and then maybe even projecting a little bit into next season. And in the final segment, we'll finish with some recruiting talk. This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 90. Welcome back to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of BleedTechBlue.com, host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jared stepped down for a second. He'll be back in a bit. John and I will talk a little Louisiana Tech, Illinois in the meantime. John, I don't think Louisiana Tech could have asked for a better matchup in the bowl game than Illinois. I mean, it brings a Power 5 conference team to your your radius of where you like to recruit, where your alumni base is very strong, and gives you an opportunity to have a strong showing.
Well, I mentioned to a friend over the weekend that as sour of a taste as the Marshall game left in our mouth, and I really did want to see the Dogs get the win, not so much for bowl considerations, but just to win a conference championship. I do believe that still holds weight in building a program, but to still be invited and accept the invitation to the Heart of Dallas Bowl, that's huge. I mean, because for more than anything, not just the extra practices postseason, but recruiting, man. That's a huge hot spot for Tech to recruit in. So to be able to say, hey, take not 2 days out of your time to come watch us play, but take 5 or 6 hours out of your one day, come drive across town and come check out what the Dogs have to offer, will be big for recruiting the East Texas area.
And then you talk about that Marshall game, and it was there's a bitter taste in most Tech fans' mouth still after that ball game, and they're going to feel it for a while. But when you look at what they went through with those, Jared and I talked about the rumors of the ineligible players. It was everybody that we had been hearing. Kenneth Dixon became eligible. He won his appeal to make the ball game. I mean the championship game. But when you're missing two starting linebackers, two starting offensive linemen, and to go into Marshall's house and nearly take one from them, I don't know if you can ask for any more.
Well, you led 58 minutes and 10 seconds of that football game. The first 58-10, you led them and were winning, and honestly, you gave it back to them. It's unfortunate. There are a couple of different situations where you can go back and look at that game and see, well, maybe if they would have done this a little differently. For instance, the field goal that they got right before halftime. Tech is almost in a prevent defense. Marshall marches down the field and then kicks a field goal and takes the 3 points that you didn't have to give them. Obviously.
Right. And then, of course, you know me, the referee hater. I've got to bring this out. The touchback. I think it was a touchback.
It was a touchback. It was a touchback. It was a touchback. Every replay showed that it should have been ruled a touchback.
And then the block in the back.
Right.
The phantom block in the back.
It was very weak. It was a very weak call. But then, of course,
so in those two plays, that's 80 yards of penalties.
Right. And then Remy, believe his last name was Watson, the running back for Marshall, fumbles the ball at the end of the third quarter, and there's no one around him. A Tech player jumps on it, and it hits him in the chest and kind of squirts out, and then the running back ends up recovering his own fumble. Tech could have got the ball back right there. On the Nick Thomason interception, Louisiana Tech gets no points off of that. They block the punt. No one picks it up. It's just laying there on the sideline, and no one picks it up. Finally, Levander picks it up, and they do get a score off of that. But really, that's two turnovers that you force in a row, and you get 6 points off of it because the point after is blocked instead of, you know, potentially 14.
It wasn't blocked. It was a bad snap. Bad hold or bad snap.
Regardless.
It was a no good PAT.
Well, no, the PAT wasn't blocked. The punt was blocked. That's what I meant.
Yeah, okay. Tech special teams, once again, were bad.
Yeah. With the exception of the 66-yard return by Carlos Henderson, well, actually every return by Carlos Henderson, it seemed as though the offensive was taken over at the 35 over and over and over again. Carlos Henderson was the lone bright spot on that.
And the block field goal. I mean, block punt. I mean, that's special teams as well. But coverage teams, field goals.
Punting.
Punting.
Oh, punting. The rugby punt.
I don't get it.
I don't.
I haven't gotten it all year.
Exactly. I haven't gotten it all year either. There was the one time where it hit the Marshall player on the foot, and Louisiana Tech Darrell Travis was able to recover it. That was the only time the rugby punt.
Because the ball went 20 yards.
Exactly. The rugby punt did anything for you, and that was because it was another terrible punt, and just so happened this time you got lucky and it touched a Marshall player.
And then they let him punt once traditionally.
Once, and that was because he was so deep.
But didn't it go for? I mean, it went for 30-something yards and down inside the five.
Yeah, it was. I believe that was his longest punt of the day, and I think it was a 38-yarder.
You turned those 23-yard punts into 38-yard punts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Marshall was taking over consistently at, like, the 40-yard line.
And I know it's hindsight, so we have the benefit of it, and you can go back and – talk about shoulda, coulda, woulda, I think I would have punted it there at the end and not tried a field goal.
Yeah, I guess so.
And make them drive the length of the field.
Right. Then you have to drive – well, hopefully you have to drive the length of the field. Of course, with the way the punting game was going, maybe
but
not.
But they kicked what was a 50-yard field goal?
Yeah, it was close to it. It was like a 48
so
or 49-yard field goal.
If he traditionally punts it again for 35 yards, he's within the 10.
Yeah. No, you're right. I didn't understand the drive early in the third quarter, or maybe – yeah, early in the third quarter when – Skip chose to hand the ball off three consecutive times to Hunter Lee and then punt. I didn't understand that one. It felt like a wasted drive to me. I didn't know what the goal was there. Hand the ball off three times to Hunter Lee in the backfield, who had not played at the running back position all season long, and then punt.
That was strange. But it also, in the second quarter, Cody Stokel did get injured. He has been injured since the UAB game where he injured his shoulder, and there was a hit where he fell on that on the throwing shoulder in the second quarter. He never was the same, and I don't think we really realized that during the game.
No, well, and Skip had mentioned that he had been hurt. He'd been nursing some kind of an injury for a few weeks.
But he looked okay against Rice.
He did. Well, he did look okay against Rice.
He looked 76 points good.
Right, yeah. You're right. He did look okay against Rice, especially considering the deep ball he was throwing against Rice, too.
I think it was more re-aggravated with that when he got hit. Now, he's got 2 weeks. He should be okay by the bowl game.
Right. And he's a tough guy. I mean, he played very tough there, all year long.
This is a critical statement, but bear with me. I think this is an indication of how he feels about the backups.
Ryan Higgins and Taylor Burch.
You could have put them in. They could have handed the ball off. I think it says all you need to know.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, even whenever Holtz would split in between Higgins and Burch every other play when they were in big games, I thought part of it was just that he wanted to give Taylor a little bit, obviously senior year, but also don't trust Ryan. And then to not go to Ryan at all. No, you're right. I mean, Ryan could have handed the ball off. He could have.
Kenneth Dixon was incredible, though.
Oh, no doubt. Three touchdowns for Kenneth, over 150 rushing yards, or 136 rushing yards.
And I don't believe he traveled with the team. So he came up.
Well, Skip came close to an hour and a half later than the team did, staying up, I guess, tying up loose ends with Kenneth's appeal. I don't know.
But if Kenneth wasn't packed.
Right. And then also, during the pregame warm-ups, Kenneth trips over an offensive lineman and twists his ankle. Has to walk off and go get it taped up.
I'm not saying that he's lying about his injuries whenever he does that kind of thing, but how many times have we seen Kenneth Dixon limp off a field and come back the very next play and run it for 50 yards? I think he kind of hams it up a little bit just to make the other team feel like he's gotten injured.
Maybe so. It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me.
There's a mental game going on the football field, too.
Can I tell you one thing?
Tell me one thing.
I thought the offensive line played pretty dang well.
I do, too.
I thought the patchwork offensive line, David Mahaffey playing, Greenwald playing, I thought they played pretty dang well.
And when you think about it that way, with Greenwald added to the other two, you're playing with three out of five that hadn't seen a whole lot of snaps all year.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And it's the only –
And even Jens Danielson, who didn't start from game one.
Right.
He's playing left tackle.
Yeah, he started against Rice and then started against Marshall. And that was it.
So really, your lone consistent starter was Kirby Wixon. And he didn't start game one. That was Joseph Brunson at center.
Yes, it was.
And then Matt, we have learned early in this show that Matt Moore is headed to Troy to be co-offensive coordinator, according to Sports Illustrated. The offensive line pretty much returns next year. You lose Greenwalt from that group that played Saturday. You lose Greenwalt, and you lose. That's it.
Of course, you'll lose Bell, who didn't play Saturday.
I'm talking from the conference championship game, you lose one player.
And Shane Carpenter's going to play next year.
And probably Derek Edinburgh.
Probably Derek Edinburgh, who has I think he's improved as the season has went on. Shane Carpenter may be one of your best offensive linemen next year.
And your Darryl Brown will have another offseason to get bigger. Jens Danielson will have an offseason to get better. There's going to be a heck of a battle at left tackle and right tackle next season between Jens Danielson and Darryl Brown and Derek Edinburgh at left tackle. And more than likely, Shane Carpenter at right tackle. Josh Robinson, who played well Saturday.
Yeah, Josh Robinson played well Saturday. Josh Robinson was the one who concerned me the most. I thought Mahaffey would be fine, and he was. Robinson was the one who concerned me the most, and Robinson was probably the one that I was the most impressed with because I had the lowest expectations for him. I thought he played well.
I agree. Let's take this break. Other side of the break, how will Louisiana Tech finish the recruiting class? They're close to finishing up. How will they finish up? This is Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. Welcome in to Bleed Tech Blue Radio on ESPN Radio 97.7. I'm Jay Ford, publisher of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Our final segment before the holiday season. Merry Christmas from all of us at Bleed Tech Blue Radio and BleedTechBlue.com. Jared, a couple of sponsors. Then we'll get into this recruiting talk.
Bleed Tech Blue Radio Season 7 is brought to you by Keller Williams Parish Y Partners, National Jewelry, Fairway Carts, and Brister Smokehouse. Join us on the Keller Williams Parish Y Partners hotline at 888-993-7762. That's 888-993-7762. Or, of course, you can email your questions to us at radio@bleedtechblue.com.
Louisiana Tech, of course, sitting at 22 commitments for the 2015 class. They will lose some down the stretch. Everybody does. Literally everybody does who has this many commitments. They're going to look to fill it with just a couple of positions, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if they leave a one or two open. You think about this spring football coming up with Cody Sokol going out, with Taylor Burch going out. You're left with Ryan Higgins and Price Wilson and Alex Woodall with a commitment from a quarterback, Jamar Smith from Meridian High School, a three-star, 6-foot, 290-pounder, a 219-pounder, not 290-pound quarterback. That'd be something. but if there's question mark at quarterback, to say the very least. You've got two redshirt freshmen and a redshirt, will he be a junior? Yes, redshirt junior next season, plus a true freshman. If this spring isn't encouraging to Holtz and company, it wouldn't surprise me in the least for them to go find a fifth-year senior transfer quarterback from an FBS program.
Sure, and you're not saying that the question mark at quarterback indicates that Price Wilson can't play or anything like that. It's just that you've got a redshirt freshman with no experience and really no experience behind him. You don't know if Higgins will transfer out or what he's going to do, but still you've seen what Higgins has to offer. So I agree. I think they're going to keep one or two spots in their back pocket just in case.
And if you have a guy like Houston Bates that comes along, you can't say no.
Sure, no. I mean, no, exactly. You want to bring in those type of guys.
Or Derek Edinburgh, who's a 6'8", 350-pound offensive lineman.
Exactly. Now, you want to keep a couple of those spots in your back pocket. And when you've had a recruiting class like Louisiana Tech has so far this year, I mean, you've got quality at each position that you've been trying to recruit. So you can have a little bit of leeway when it comes to these final couple of spots.
To close out the class, I think an offensive lineman and a linebacker would be nice. And specifically, O'Shea Dugas from Northside High School in Lafayette, an offensive lineman. And then right down the road in Hainesville, Kendrick Jackson, the linebacker who's committed to Arizona. It's not over with Kendrick. He may be committed to Arizona, but his cousin is James is committed to Louisiana Tech, and those two are like brothers, and I wouldn't be surprised if both of them would like to play at the next level together. Let's go to the Keller Williams Parish White Partners hotline and with B. B, what's going on, my man?
Hey, guys. You may have already talked about this at some point, but I just was curious. What happened to all those UAB players? They're bound to be eligible to go somewhere else immediately, right?
They are eligible. They are eligible to go some places immediately. I don't know if they've got people outside of Jordan Howard that can really help Louisiana Tech. The punter would have, but he's a senior. But the rule is you still have to stay underneath your 85 scholarship limit. Well,
right, absolutely.
Well, Louisiana Tech, I don't know if they've got enough room.
Right, that would be the big question, would be whether or not they have enough room. I don't think they do.
You guys were talking about a quarterback, and I don't know what all they have.
Clements is. I don't think he was a senior, and he's a decent quarterback, but I don't think he's far and away better than what they've got on the roster. That's what you're going to do if you're going to pull in a transfer.
Right.
You got to pull in somebody that you know is going to come in and supplant the job, kind of like a Cody Sokol. I mean, they didn't bring him in to sit on the bench, and we see that. So I think it's something interesting to watch. I don't think Louisiana Tech gets into the UAB player lottery. But there were reports that college coaches flew from all over the country and even were actively recruiting them on campus. I think that's hilarious.
Right.
You would never see that in any other situation. But since you disbanded your program, it's 100% legal. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall in those conversations.
All right. Well, we know we need a quarterback. We don't have to have a Tim Rattay or a Luke McCown that can throw for 40 yards a game, but we've got to have somebody that the team has confidence in that can lead him up and down the field.
Absolutely, B. Appreciate your call.
All right, guys. Bye.
I think he's got a good point, but I just don't know if there's anybody that comes in and you talk about offensive lines, a concern that Tech's had for several years. But like we were talking about right before the break, the majority of those guys come back.
Right. Most of those guys on the offensive line are going to come back. That offensive lineman is going to continue to improve. It's going to be better. I think it will be better next year than it was this year, and this year was certainly an improvement on last year. I think they'll be fine. I don't think Louisiana Tech is going to get into this whole UAB football
player lottery.
Really, with the exception of Jordan Howard, there's not really just
Tech doesn't need a running back.
No, and Louisiana Tech doesn't need a running back because Kenneth's going to be here next year.
All likelihood.
Right. Jared Kraft has had a great freshman year. Jacquez Danthy's coming in this year.
Blake Martin.
Blake Martin's still there. I think you're fine.
And then you've been sitting out the player, what's his name?
Marcus Gaines?
Marcus Gaines is another one.
Marcus Gaines is another one.
The big kid that they added late last season. I can't believe his name is escaping me. Can find it really fast. Mississippi, former quarterback from the Mississippi River Delta.
Cameron McKnight is another guy that could see some time at running back.
Tywin Walters is who I'm talking about.
Tywin Walters.
At 5'11", 215, 220. Some people say he's already the fastest running back on the team, and he's the biggest running back on the team. He's got a bright future. So, he just had to learn. He has to learn the position. He's never played running back before.
Right. Now, again, I think you're just fine with who you've got. I think you're just fine with who you've got. And then, you know, even with the offensive line, like you were talking about, I think Deontay McCready is going to be fine. I think.
And I think Deontay McCready, speaking of which, is on campus. He was a gray shirt.
Yeah. No.
He will participate in spring practice.
I think Shane Carpenter will be. I think he'll play really well next year. And then, of course, there's someone I was thinking of. Oh, Michael Rodriguez. Michael Rodriguez has gained weight. Tight end, offensive lineman. I mean, 6'6". He's closer now to 200
probably.
Yeah, 280 pounds, something like that. So another big blocker.
I think that Rodriguez is probably still a year or two away from contributing. But he certainly looks the part. And what you want in those big bodies like that is somebody who's nimble on his feet, and he certainly fits that category. Like we said, this is the last show of Bleed Tech Blue Radio until after the new year. We wish you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year from all of us here at Bleed Tech Blue Radio and BleedTechBlue.com. We will see you after the new year. See you then.
Been listening to Bleed Tech Blue Radio with Jonathan Ford. Listen to Bleed Tech Blue Radio every Tuesday.